Now we're holding on page Ayin Beis in Bava Basra, Ois Nun Beis, continuing with the stories of Rava Bava Chana. So the Gemara says, "V'omer Rava Bava Chana, the didi chazi li ha'hu akrupta." Rava Bava Chana says, "I saw a frog." Now we said yesterday that the Ritva learns that whenever he says the didi chazi li, he means that he saw it in a vision. So I saw a frog. And it wasn't just any frog, Dehavaki Akra Dehagrunya. This frog was the size of Akra Dehagrunya, the name of a town. And the Akra Dehagrunya Kamahavi, how big is that town? Shittin Bati. It has 60 houses in it. So in short, this frog was the size of 60 houses. Osa Tanina, a snake came, and specifically Tanin. Sometimes the Rashbam points out that when we define how big Akra Dehagrunya is, that's the Gemara interjecting. Rav Bava Chana just said it was the size of Akra Dehagrunya. His listeners knew what the size of the city is. The Gemara editorializes for us, you should know how big the city is, 60 houses. Then Rav Bava Chana resumes his story, Osa Tanina Bala. A tanina, tanin usually means a water snake, specifically a water creature of some kind. Sometimes you find taninim can mean snake. It can mean whales, it can mean crocodiles, there's a variety of different water creatures that it means. Bala, and it swallowed the snake. It swallowed the frog. Also Pushkansa, then a female raven came, Ubala or Tanina, and swallowed up the tanin, the snake, or however we want to translate it. The Solik Yasa Beilana, and then that raven went and perched in a tree. So come imagine how great was the strength of that tree. The frog itself was big, and we're saying the snake obviously had to be bigger, and the raven still bigger than that. Imagine how strong that tree is that it can hold that weight. Amar Papa Bar Shmuel, so the Papa Bar Shmuel says, if I had not been there, I would not believe that such a thing is possible. Now, later on in the sugya, we're going to have a story about Rabbi Yochanan teaching something about Yemosa Mashiach, about the Osid Lavoi, and a certain Talmud makes fun of it, mocks it, and the legal Golovo is a Talmud, and later on he's actually shown that what Rabbi Yochanan was saying is absolutely true, and when he comes back and tells Rabbi Yochanan, you know what, you're right, I saw it with my own eyes, Rabbi Yochanan tells, listen, you're mocking the words of the Chachamim, and he put his eyes on him, and the guy did not have a happy ending, to put it mildly. Why over here was Rabbi Papa Bar Shmuel is not an issue. So different Mephoshim talk about different possibilities. The Rebbe, actually, someone once asked the Rebbe about that. There's an excerpt of a letter printed in the back of one of the volumes of the Likutei Sichos. The Rebbe answered briefly, first of all, he was not malaglik. He's saying, if I hadn't seen it, I hadn't believed it, I wouldn't believe it. That's not the same thing as mocking it. Second of all, it can mean he wouldn't have believed that it can be true on the simple level as well. After all, as we talked about at the beginning of the sugya, a lot of different mephoshim talk about, are these actual things that exist in the physical world, or are they only metaphorical? So the Papa Bar Shmuel was saying, if I hadn't actually seen this large frog and all of this, then I wouldn't have believed it. So that's fine. In other words, he would have said, in other words, that it's only a metaphor. And besides that, he's only saying it in private, he's not saying it in front of all the Chachamim like that Talmud did, and as it is, you have enough Mephoshim that say that this whole thing is metaphorical, and therefore it's different than this guy that Talmud denying what Rabbi Yochanan had said in public and mocking it and so forth. Okay, so what's going on over here? Marsha says that this story represents, first of all, the Ritva says briefly, the Ritva in Akosiv over here says that it represents the kingdom of the Muslims, where they got mixed up with all kinds of different nations, and now they became a great world power. And then we're saying that the power, the greatness, the strength of the tree is that the Jewish people, look how strong the Jewish people are, that we're able to live under the shadow of that raven and all those creatures, and we're still able to learn Torah and do mitzvahs. And if we hadn't seen it, we wouldn't have believed it ourselves that such a thing would be possible. Marsha goes into more detail. He says the frog represents the Greek kingdoms. Why? Because the word frog in Hebrew is tsardeia. So that stands for tsar, which means the morning, and deia, which means knowledge, because the Greeks had a tremendous amount of bright sciences and knowledges and all. So they're represented by the frog. It's called a frog that's the size of a city that has 60 houses because Alexander the Great, when he established the great Greek empire, he conquered many different nations and ruled over them. So therefore, metaphorically, it's called 60. Now then, what happened is, he continues, that a snake came and swallowed it up. That refers to the Romans, who swallowed up and absorbed the Greek Empire. It's called a snake, as in the Nachash HaKadmoni, because they get their power from that tumor, like that primordial Nachash. Then in turn, also Maharsha points out, the word tanin is also related in Hazinu. We have the expression chamas taninim yenam, the anger or the venom of snakes is their wine, referring to the goyim and the cups of punishment that they're going to end up drinking, like we learned about yesterday. So it means therefore, so, and they in their anger destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, and therefore they're called a tanin. Now what happens is, the next thing in the stage, that's not the end of things yet, then the Arabs come along and conquer the Romans, which, by the way, keep in mind, the Arabs conquered the Muslim religion and their conquest for several hundred years after Rabbah Bar Bachana. So then we're saying, with this and some of the other stories, that we understood that to be referring to them, that the Hakosev had brought before from the Ritva, that the story about the Urzila, about the newborn animal, was also a reference to them. So obviously there's a Ruach HaKodesh involved over here, that he's able to know hundreds of years in advance that this is going to happen. So the female raven represents the Arabs. Why? Because they, on the one hand, they come from a place of Tara. Therefore, Yishmael's father was Avraham. On the other hand, his mother was Hagar. So therefore, he's called a female raven in token of, where does he get his tumah from? From his mother. So he went to Eretz Yisrael and conquered it. And when it says he's perching on a tree, that refers to how does this all come about in the Schus of Avram Avinu, who is compared to a giant tree. So now we're saying, imagine how great is the strength of that tree. Look at the strength and the power of Avram Avinu and his great Schus, that for thousands of years after that, the Arabs, the Muslims, have such great power because of Avram Avinu. And they still continue to control Eretz Yisrael. In the time when Maharsha was writing, they ruled over the entire Eretz Yisrael. The Turks had conquered Eretz Yisrael a couple of decades before Maharsha was born. Even nowadays, you have a Jewish state in parts of Israel, but you still have the Arabs have too much control of large parts of it. So in that sense, they continue to have it until the actual Geula comes. And so now, so what we're saying, imagine how powerful is that Schus of Avraham that stands them in good stead all this time to be able to have that control over Eretz Yisrael. A couple of Mephoshim talk about variations on that. Emes Yaakov in particular points out the tree, rather than representing Avraham Avinu, it can also represent, we know in Parshas Vayera, when Avraham kicked Hagar and Yishmael out of the house, and they were wandering in the desert, and then at one point they ran out of water, and Hagar places Yishmael under a bush, and she goes away and starts crying, and then Hashem has a malach show her a well. So Emes Yaakov explains that the tree in Rabbi Baba Hana's story over here represents the bush, the tree, whatever, under which Yishmael was lying. He learns that at that point, while Yishmael was lying there and almost dying of thirst, he did tshuva. Now we find, why was he kicked out of the house in the first place? So he was mitzachek, Rashi said he was doing avodah zarah, gilui arayis, shfichus damim, so Sarah said he doesn't belong in our house. Now you have the famous thing that when he's crying over there, and when Hagar was crying, that the Rashi brings that the Malachim were arguing to Hashem, let him die of thirst. His descendants are gonna do terrible things and torment the Jewish people. And Hashem says, Vasher Husham, I'm judging him as he is right now, and right now he's not so bad. What do you mean he's not so bad? He's doing avodah zarah, gilui arayis, shfichus damim. So Emes Yaakov explains that lying there under the tree, he did tshuva. Therefore, Hashem can judge him favorably. So now, in other words, the point is of saying how powerful that tree is. Imagine, realize from that how powerful tshuva is, that it's still standing by his descendants thousands of years after that. So now you have like this other explanations. The Vilna Gaon gives an explanation as follows: the frog, he says, represents a Talmud Chacham. The Zohar tells us, actually, why did the Eved to bring a makkah of frogs on the Mitzriim? A lot of the makkahs, we can easily understand what they were. They attacked their god, the Nile, attacked their animals, attacked their trees. Why have us frogs? The reason is, the Zohar says, frogs are constantly croaking and making noise by day and by night, and that's like a Talmud Chacham. V'agisibo yom v'layla. Talmud Chacham learns Torah day and night. And the Mitzriim were preventing the Jews from learning Torah, therefore they deserve to be struck with frogs. So now, Rabbi Baba Chana says, I saw a great Talmud Chacham who's not just a regular sized frog, he's the size of Akra de Hagrunia. Hagrunia, he explains, is related to the word Goroin, which means the throat. This Talmud Chacham uses his throat to say and speak words of Torah. And he has 60, he's the size of a city with 60 houses, meaning he's learned the entire Shas, all 60 Masechtas, and it's all in a city in the sense that he has Yiras Shemayim to go with it as well. But now along comes the Tanin, which is a special kind of Yetzer Hara that attacks specifically Talmid Chachamim. Meaning, in other words, you have those land snakes, and those represent the Yetzer Haras of Tivus and other things like that. Then you have water snakes. Those represent the kind of Yetzer Hara that attacks Talmid Chachamim, who learn the Torah, which is compared to water. So he comes and swallows him up, in the sense that he makes him start worrying about his parnasa. And now the Talmud Chacham stops his croaking, his frog's croaking, his learning, because he's being attacked by the Yetzer Hara, and he's worried about where is his parnasa going to come from. So what happens, though? The Talmud Chacham has to overcome that now. He has to be, the next thing is, the raven swallows the snake. Meaning, the Gemara tells, we have in morning davening, we have in Tillim, Noisim Levehem Alachma, Hashem provides all the animals their food, Livnei Orev Asher Yikro, Hashem provides for the baby ravens when they call out. What happens, Chazal explains, the baby ravens, the parents are cruel to them, they abandon them, they don't even recognize them as their own children because the babies are born white and the ravens themselves are black. So they don't feed their babies at all, but Hashem provides, the babies cry out, the baby birds cry out to Hashem, and Hashem provides them worms and they eat. So therefore, a raven is a symbol of a person who realizes, I don't need to worry about parnasa for myself and my family and my children, I'm leaving it up to the Eibishter. So that's what we're saying. In other words, what happens, this Talmud Chacham who's being attacked by the Tanin and swallowed up by the Tanin, he has to find his own inner raven and realize that he has to be as a Achzori Albonov, so to speak. He has to be not really Achzori, literally means cruel, not cruel to his children. In other words, to realize that the Eibishter runs things and he doesn't have to be constantly worrying about Parnosa for them. He should leave it up to the Eibishter. We find in that connection, for example, there's a Gemara in Eruvin, one of the Chachamim is going away to learn Torah for out of town for a long period of time, as the Chachamim did in those days, and his wife asks him, what's going to be with Parnosa for us? And he answers her, you know, there are wild plants in the meadow that you can go and gather, and you and the kids will live off that. So this is an example of being like an Eruv. So now, when he does that, when this Talmud Chacham finds within himself that bitachon to realize, I don't have to worry about my parnasa, I'm forget about the snake, my raven is going to swallow the snake, and I'm going to still remain in learning Torah and not worry about parnasa, then the Eibishter provides him a tree as in a supporter, a zvulun, to his yisachar, who taka supports him so he and his family have what to live off on. Now we're saying, imagine how powerful that tree is. Imagine the tremendous schus of that person who supports the Talmud Chacham so that he can continue learning. And now, Rapapa Bar Shmuel says, Rapapa Bar Shmuel was from Bavel. In Bavel, we find in other Gemaras, in Beitza in particular, that the rich people in Bavel many times were stingy and did not support Talmud Chachamim. So he says, if I had not been there, I wouldn't have believed it, because where I come from in Bavel, you won't find trees like that who support the Talmud Chachamim. Only in Eretz Yisrael, which is where Rav Avachana was from, can you find such a thing. Imagine their tremendous schus. So the Malbim says a variation on that. The Malbim says that the frog also represents the power of Mesiras Nefesh. We find the frogs in Mitzrayim that went into the ovens and so forth. So that means, in other words, a person has within him a power of Mesiras Nefesh. We know the Gemara tells us famously in Erevin that if we hadn't been given the Torah, and the Rebbeim would always add Chas V'Shalom when they quoted that Gemara, then we would learn sneers from the cat and not to steal from the ant and so forth. So from every creature we can learn a lesson and because we have something of that creature within ourselves. So therefore, Rav Avachana is saying, I found within myself that power of Mesiras Nefesh represented by the frog. But then again, the snake comes and swallows it. There's a Yetzer Hara that opposes it and tries to overpower it. But again, I found within myself the raven, that the power, again, to be able to overcome that and be able to say, I'm going to rely on the Eibishter and I'm not worried about anything that the Yetzer Hara is going to throw at me. And then you can perch in a tree in the Eitz HaChayim and you'll have life forever. So now Rav Papa Bar Shmuel says, if I hadn't been there, I wouldn't have believed it. Meaning I went through the same kind of thing. I also had that struggle with my inner Tanin, and I had to find my inner Orev to be able to overpower it. One more. I mean, there's a lot of interesting other ones. As I said at the beginning, there's entire Sfarim have been written about these Agantes, but the Kli Yoker brings an Olo Sephraim like this. He also says that Hagrunya is related to Goroin, but he says it's talking about Talmud Chacham who gives Musr to the people. When we say that he had the, he's like the size of a city with 60 houses, not the 60 masechtas, but rather you have the 24 sforim of Tanakh and the 6 sforim of Mishnah, and each one of them you have Nigla and Nistar. You have the Nigla part of it, and you have the Kabbalistic part of it. So therefore, that's 24 plus 6 is 30, times 2 makes 60. Then again, they're attacked by the snake, by the Rishoyim and the Yetzirah, and like the raven, here also the raven also being black represents that he's going to blacken his face, looning Torah. He's not going to worry about any of his comforts or anything, tachi dachrishal Torah. He'll eat pas v'melach and so forth, and even his face is turning black from a lack of proper food, he's still going to fakifzich in Torah. So now with that, he's able to swallow the snake and defeat the Yetzirah, and he goes up to the great heights of Torah. Look at the power of that, that with the power of Torah, he's able to overcome that kind of Yetzirah. And again, Rapapa Bar Shmuel is saying that I myself went through the same kind of thing, and if I hadn't gone through it myself, I wouldn't have believed that it's possible to overcome such a powerful Yetzirah. Next. V'omer Rabbi Bar Chana, Zimna Choda Havaka Azlina B'Sinta. One time, says Rabbi Bar Chana, I was traveling on a ship. I saw a certain fish, and achlatina got lodged in its nose. Achlatina, Rashbam translates as sheriff's cotton, a little creature, lodged in the big fish's nose. The Gemara, Rashbam refers to a Gemara in Masech the Shabbos that says, even though B'derech HaTeva, usually the smaller creatures are afraid of the larger ones, but you have several examples where the Ebishter made it the other way around, that a large creature is afraid of one that's much smaller than it, and one example is the Gemara says of the Leviosan is afraid of the Kilvis. The Kilvis is a little kind of fish, a little kind of creature that, as the Gemara says of a heel, gets into its nose and can irritate it or even kill it by blocking its airways. So here, Rashbam says, this achlatina literally means a mud eater, so it means like a little fish that swims on the bottom, so it looks like it's eating mud, but nevertheless, despite it being so tiny compared to the cavra, to the big fish, it lodged in its nose, and that killed the large fish. So now the waves, the water, rejected and expelled the dead big fish. Shvam points out, anytime you have the nothing dead stays in the water for very long, it gets cast up onto the shore. So now this big fish is cast up onto the shore, Shadur Liguda, and it was cast up by the waves onto the shore. 60 cities were destroyed by this fish, by this giant fish landing on them. Of Ochlam in a Shittin Mechuzi, 60 more cities ate from the flesh of the fish. Umochim in a Shittin Mechuzi, and 60 more cities who were further away. So 60 ate from the fresh flesh of the fish. 60 more cities, Rashbam explains, that lived further away. Umochim in a Shittin Mechuzi. 60, the people of 60 cities who lived a little further away, they took some of the meat and salted it to preserve it so that they could eat it later. The karivu u'milu michad galgala de'ene, from one eyeball of this giant fish, they were able to fill up tlas mea gabi mishcha, 300 barrels of oil. The chihadron, the boss of Teresa, Yav Cheshata, then Rabbi Bachana says, when I returned to that place 12 months later, chazinan, then we saw, to have a kaminsir in the gami metalalta, they were taking the bones of this gigantic fish and sawing beams out of it, the yasvi l'mimnina hanach mechuzi, and they were going to use those bones, now made into beams, to rebuild those 60 destroyed cities. So Ritva explains, Ritva says a few words on it, that it means, in other words, that a tiny little thing, this achlatin, this tiny little creature, is able to destroy entire nations, and then eventually it itself gets destroyed as well, as he explains briefly. Marsha explains in more detail like this. This is all a metaphor for the story of Purim, very appropriate as Mangroma right now. What happened? So we're going in a boat, which a boat is always an inherently dangerous thing. The same way we're traveling a ship through the dangers of Golis. Now, we saw a giant fish. That giant fish represents Haman. He does his girdle, he goes from month to month, miyom liyom, mechodesh lechodesh, and he lands on Mazel Adar. What is the Mazel of Adar? Fish, dogim. So therefore, and he wanted to be like a fish that swallows up the smaller fish. He's going to swallow up the Jewish people. Meanwhile, what happens is a little tiny mud eater, the kilvis, comes and lodges in his nose. That's Mordechai. Haman thought Mordechai is a nothing, but it still irritated him so much that Mordechai won't bow to him. So what was the result? Mordechai eventually was able, with his tefillas, to overpower Haman and cause him to be killed. And then the water threw him out. So now he's thrown out of where he his natural habitat, and he ends up dying. So what happened now? So 60 cities were destroyed, represents all the nations, all the Goyish nations who tried to fight against the Jewish people on Yud Gimel Adar, so to speak. Like, he landed on them, and then they're kaput. That's represented by the 60 cities that were destroyed. Then you have, when we said that 60 cities ate from the flesh, that refers to the Jews who defeated those Goyim and were able to take the spoils. The Pasuk actually says in the Megillah they didn't, but still they were able to. So therefore, they would have been able to eat from that fish. And besides, also the Pasuk does describe that all of Haman's wealth and his mansion and everything was transferred to Esther, who in turn gave it to Mordechai. So therefore, we can say that they ate from the fish. Then what do we mean that, so that's what it means that they, that's what it means that they ate from it. Now, what about the Maharsha doesn't mention what the salting, doesn't explain what the salting means. But Pashtos, I guess Maharsha would say, similar idea. In other words, you have the people in Shoshana nearby, and then you have the people further away. Both of them are able to eat in their own way and enjoy the spoils. Next, what does it mean that from one eyeball they got 300 barrels of oil? Haman was putting his eyes on the galgal, as in the circle of the mazolos, to find which mazel will be the best one, where he's going to find a bad mazel for the Jewish people. Meanwhile, instead, that mazel was overturned, and now we have, there was such a tremendous simcha. Simcha is always represented, among other things, by lighting candles. So therefore, that's represented by, we have 300 barrels of oil, 300 barrels of oil to light candles to celebrate in Adar, like Hudimaisa Oira, the simcha, etc. And then he finishes off. When we came back there 12 months later, we found that they're sawing up the bones. The word darme means bones, but it also means Meloshon groma, as in what he caused. Because of what he caused, we come back a year later, and every single year after that, we rebuild those cities that every year he tried to destroy us, and every year we rebuild it, and we have a simchas purim, and we reaccept the Torah, and all that. So therefore, so this story is all a metaphor for what we went through during the story of Purim. Let's see. Other explanations. Eitz Yosef brings over here that it has to do with it's also that that's the next one he refers to. Okay, so Oilus Ephraim, the Kli Yaakov, gives an explanation like this. The ship is, again, we talked about one way of understanding the ship in these stories is that it's talking about the experience in Golos, but the other understanding is a person, the individual person, as he travels through this world with all the storms of the Yetzer Hara and the Umas Olam and all that. The fish, the giant fish, represents a tzaddik, represents a very great tzaddik. Now, what happens is, even a great tzaddik sometimes has a tiny little aveda, a tiny little mistake that causes that he passes away. That's represented by the little mud eater that got lodged and stuck in his nose. Some of the Mefarshim even explain, this is specifically talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, where the one little thing that he did wrong, hitting the rock instead of speaking to it, caused that he passed away. So what happens now? The fish now, where the great tzaddik passes away, and he's thrown out onto Guda. Guda means the seashore, but Olos Ephraim means that also the word Guda means a wall. Because in other words, his chosim had been like a wall that protected the people of his generation. Now, what happens is like this. When a great tzaddik like that passes away, continues the Olos Ephraim, there's three different reactions that some people have. Some people say, you know what, look, if even a great tzaddik eventually passes away, what do we need this world for, b'chlal? We may as well withdraw from the world, and we'll just live as prushim. That's represented by the 60 destroyed cities. But that's not what the Eibishter wants. The Eibishter wants us to live in the world and make it a did of a tachtonim. Then another group says, you know what, look, if even a great tzaddik passes away, it goes to show, so there's nothing greater to live for. We may as well eat and drink and live it up in this world. There's nothing for the future. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we'll die, as the phrase has it. That's represented by the 60 cities that ate from the flesh of the fish. So like, we're going to eat it, we're going to live it up, we're not going to care what's going to be for the Olam HaEmes. The third group understands that, no. We have a bris melach olam. We have a covenant of salt about the Torah, and that reward will be salted and preserved away for our future. So no, we're not going to withdraw from the world. We're going to continue doing Torah and mitzvahs in the world. We're not going to, on the other hand, say we're just going to live it up and forget about Torah and mitzvahs. Our job is to continue and recommit ourselves to bris melach olam. And then they recognize, and the one eye with 300 barrels of oil represents, they realize that it's Hashem's eye, in Hashem or Yireya, that's constantly watching and making things happen in the world, and they realize that therefore we need to recommit ourselves to Torah Avodah and Gemilas Chasadim. As we learned yesterday or 2 days ago, he explains that symbolically each of those can be represented by the number 100, so therefore the three of them together is 300. That's represented by the 300 barrels of oil. Then, what does it mean that we come and find that they're rebuilding the cities from his bones? That refers to Tchias HaBesim. You have this one bone, the loose bone, from which the entire body is rebuilt, meaning, in other words, it's not the end, that Tzaddik has passed away, and that's the end of it. There's yet going to be a Tchias HaBesim when his body is going to be rebuilt out of the bone that is left. Then there's an explanation. There's a sefer called Sofnas Paneach. It's not the same one from the Rogatra, but there's a zillion svarim called Sofnas Paneach. But anyway, there's one like this. Now you have like this: the ship that Rabba is on versus the fish. Those are both creatures of the sea. But the difference is the ship is a great Talmud Chacham that Rabba himself learned by, whereas the fish is a Talmud Chacham who went off the derech like Acher. So there was a mud eater, there was this achlatina in his nose, representing how Acher got infected with ideas of apikorsis and went off the derech, and he got pushed out of the water and became a Rashi. He doesn't belong among the Chachamim anymore. So now what happened was 60 cities were destroyed, represents many people learned from him and became Rishoyim as well. So they were destroyed. On the other hand, though, we still learn his Torah. We have him in Pirkei Avos, there's a few other things in the Gemara from him. So therefore, that represents that we eat from his flesh, and we have the salt, the spice of his pilpul that he did in Torah. And lots of agadta represented by 300 barrels. Eventually, what happens is he spends his 12 months in Gehenna, and then we carve up his bones. Bones means atmos. What is the atmos of a yid? Torah and mitzvahs. We carve them up and we use them for building. So in other words, ultimately, we can build something in our world out of, even though Ather went off the derech, and we have so many stories about what happened afterwards, nevertheless, we're still able to take his atmos and use it after all for Kedusha. Then there's another one also that Jehiel Marsha had related the story to the story of Purim. So the Emes Liakov explains that it also has to do with the story of Purim. The fish is Achashverosh. The little creature that got into his nose is the Kedusha within him, which eventually had a son, Daryavesh, who gave permission to rebuild the Bet Mikdash. But he was pushed out of the water in the sense originally he ruled over the entire known world, and then there came a point when he lost a large part of his kingdom, including the islands. During his time, you had the cities destroyed, as in he gave orders to stop the building of this mikdash. But then we have the mishkav simcha of Purim, and we have the salted represents that ultimately through all of that came the rebuilding of this mikdash, like he salt something away for long term benefit. Later on, Daryavesh even gave hundreds of barrels of oil, it says in the Pasuk, to the Beis HaMikdash. And from Achashverosh himself came, just like from the fish came the bones that they used to rebuild the towns, the same way from Achashverosh comes Daryavesh, who gave permission to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash. So showing how even you have a Rosha like Achashverosh and everything that he was trying to do, and he tried to stop the Beis HaMikdash, and even when Esther comes to him over and over, and every time he tells her, Ad Chatzia Malchus, I'm absolutely not giving permission to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, nevertheless, without out him even knowing it, his own son was the one who gave the permission for it. The Gemara continues another story. The Amar Rabba Bachana, Zimna Chodah have a cause women besfinta. One time we were traveling on a ship, the Chazinna Hu Kavra, we saw a certain ship, Diyasfale Chalta Agabe. There was sand on the back of this fish. The fish had been sitting there for a long time, so sand had gathered on its back. The kodach agma ilavei, and even weeds were growing in the sand. Savrinan yabeshti, so we, the people on the boat, figured this, they didn't, we didn't realize it was a fish. We thought it's an island. B'salkinen. So we went off the boat and went up onto the island. V'afinen u'bashlinen and agaben. We started baking and cooking on the back of this quote-unquote island. The kad chan gabe, but then when the back of the fish got the, when the back of the fish felt, when the fish felt the heat on its back, it happened, then it turned over. The ilav to have makarva sfinta, if it hadn't been that the ship was right nearby, have a tavin and we would have drowned. Hakosev brings from the Ritva like this. It means there's going to come times. There are times we've been in a long golos. But in between, in the times of golos, sometimes there are times when it seems very peaceful and everything seems there and we seem to be in good shape. And it seems that, and the purpose of it is because after all, that way Hashem gives us a break, but that way we have time to develop in Torah and Mitzvahs. But then the fact is that, it doesn't always last, and eventually we wind up thrown back into the water, and if the ship's not there, if we don't realize that we have to stick to Torah and Mitzvahs, then we would get destroyed, Chas v'Shalom. Marsha explains, in other words, putting more detail into it, that, here, it also relates to the story of Purim. The fish over here, again, represents Chodesh Adar. In the sense, and the back of it, he explains, the back of it represents the summertime. Because, in other words, you have before it the face of the fish, so to speak, faces towards the winter, which is a rainy, stormy season. But then the back of it represents Nisan and the summertime, which seems like good times. So we think that it's a good time of Mazel. We figured that we're not in the time of Purim. Many Jews thought we're not in Golos anymore. We're living it up. Ahasuerush considers us like equal citizens, and we start assimilating among the Goyim. And we nenu misudase shal Ahasuerush. They went and ate from Ahasuerush's party and all that. So we're baking and cooking. But then when things get hot, then all of a sudden, no, it turned into a heat, it turned into an anger. Instead of Nisan being a good time for the Jewish people that year, it was the time of Haman's Zera. And we were thrown off, and we almost would have been drowned if not for the fact we knew right away the ship is nearby. We have to right away do tshuva and recommit ourselves as Mordechai and the Jewish people did that time. And if not for that, Chas v'Shalom, we would have drowned in Golos. Various other mafoshim talk about variations about that, that the idea that, in other words, we're talking about something that you think is very permanent, and it turns out to be not so permanent. It includes, many Mephoshim talk about variations on this idea that there are times when we think we're very comfortable in Golos, and then the Eibishter shows us it's not so. There's a very, very famous Meshech Chochmah on that, where he says that, for example, he talks about the Jews of his times. They said, Berlin is our Jerusalem. We don't need a Yerushalayim. We don't need a Beis Hamikdash anymore. We live as equal rights citizens in Germany. And soon enough, the fish turned over, and they found it's not quite so comfortable in Germany as they thought. Then there's an interesting explanation from Rav Nachman Breslover. He says that the fish actually, he says over here, represents a tzaddik adur. When we say there's sand on its back, it means, in other words, we're davening for the fact that Eibishter seems to have turned his back to us. And we daven through our tefillos, our help to come close to the Eibishter through the tzaddik, representing that we're on the back of the fish and davening. So we're making preparations to be able to join together with the Shechina, eating and cooking and eating and everything. And sure enough, it causes that Hashem turns his midas adin into midas harachmim. But after all, we have to realize that ultimately it's the Eibishter's chesed that saves us. And if it wasn't for that ship of chesed nearby, we would drown in Golos. So in other words, even though as much as we think that it's our tefillos that are accomplishing a lot, it is. But at the end of the day, it's really the Eibishter's chesed that keeps us going throughout all the time in Golos. Then you have there's an explanation, I think, from Erlos Ephraim that says that it's talking about, for example, a person that from Sofnas Paneach. He says you're studying by a great Rosh Hashiva, you're on a ship, and then you see somebody who seems like a tzaddik. He seems to be also an expert in all the sciences, and we thought we should go ahead, let's learn science from him. But then we get into discussions of Torah. We showed that no, he doesn't really want anything to do with Torah. He's only interested in his sciences, and he only looked on the surface like a big Talmid Chacham, and really he's not interested in Torah at all. So we realize we better just get back to our ship as fast as possible. We don't belong discussing with this kind of guy who has no interest. Okay. Yom Mashiach Ge'ola. Vavod Aleph, so the Rambam brings in Hilchos Malachim about the qualities of Mashiach when there rises a king from Beis David who studies Torah and does mitzvahs like his ancestor David, and he compels all the Jews to follow the Torah and to strengthen its weakened points and fights the wars of Hashem, and he's Becheskas Mashiach. So therefore we see three essential things about Mashiach's Avodah. There's Hoga B'Torah, he delves into Torah, which refers to his Avodah about himself. There's Yaakov Koyisrael, he compels the whole Jewish people, which means that he works with others, he works on Mitzrayim, he works on Shlichus, to be toil on the rest of the Jewish people. And Yochum, Mochamas Hashem, refers to Mashiach's Avodah regarding his whole portion in the world, which includes subjugating and conquering all the enemies, all the enemy nations around him. For Vavod Abayz, the Gemara tells us that La'asid Lavay, Hashem is going to take out the sun from its sheath, and the tzaddikim will be healed by it, and as the Rebbe interjects, V'amich kolam tzaddikim, the whole Jewish people are tzaddikim, so all of us will benefit from that. What does that mean? In other words, it means we know that Hashem, we know that the energy of Elikos is compared to the sun, ki shemesh amogan, avaya alikim. So now we'll have the full intensity of shemesh avaya will be completely revealed and brought down and be able to be absorbed into the physical gulf. And then in that way, it'll heal the actual physical goof. Continuing on halachas of tzitzis, if a person was wearing a talus and it fell off, so now when he puts it back on, he would have to make another bracha, and that applies even if he's wearing a talus cotton. Because it fell off shaloi midaita without his knowledge, therefore it doesn't help to have the das to put it back on. Before we were talking about a person voluntarily takes off his talus and has it off for a little while and then puts it back on, when he has to make a bracha, when not, depends on how long he planned to have it off, depends on hesach das, the various other factors that we learned about yesterday, but here it fell off shaloi midaita, so therefore he'd need another bracha. When does that apply though? Only if it completely fell off. But if it's still partially on his body, even if most of it falls off, since he has some of the mitzvah still on his body, then he doesn't have to make another bracha. Now, though, that would only work, though, only if part of it is still on his body. But if it's only on his hand, then the fact is there's no mitzvah to put a talus on your hand. The talus is on your body and on your head. So therefore, it means there's nothing left of the mitzvah on him, and he would, in fact, have to make another bracha. Okay. Now, like this. When you have a beged that has four corners and it's meant to be worn by day, the Gemara explains to us, it was actually today's Daf HaYomi, that it's a machlokas, the Chachamim and Reb Shimon, whether tzitzis is, whether a person is chayiv and tzitzis at night, the halacha is he's not. The halacha is like Reb Shimon, that sus laila, nighttime garments are potter from tzitzis. So now, a person has a beged of four corners that is meant to be worn by day. So if he continues wearing it all night and he still wakes up with it in the morning, so he doesn't make a bracha on it in the morning because, like this, yesh oimrim, there are, when we talk about, when we say that nighttime garments are potter from tzitzis, so some rishonim learn, including the Rosh, that when we say that, so when we say nighttime versus daytime garments, what do we mean? Do we mean a garment that's worn by night or a garment that's meant to be worn by night? The Rosh learns that it means that if it's meant to be worn by day, even if you happen to be wearing it at night, it would still be chayiv and tzitzis. So it would come out then by according to the Rosh, it comes out that this beged never had a time when it was potter from tzitzis. Therefore, the night is not a hefsek, and therefore you wouldn't make a brach on it in the morning. On the other hand, yesh omrim, specifically the Rambam holds, that no, when we say that nighttime clothing is potter, means anytime you wear it at night, even if it's meant to be worn by day. So therefore, now, according to the Rambam, then it comes out that this beged that you wore by day, fell asleep with at night, and now you wake up in the morning still wearing it, it comes out there was a time in between when it was potter, and that would be a hefsek. So therefore, so now, according to that way of looking at it, then it would be as if the tzitzis were not on you at all, and therefore you'd have to make a bracha on them in the morning. So, to be yotzel, the divrei hakel, better to put on a different talus and have in mind to also potter this one that you slept in. This is also the idea behind the Arizal tells us, even though in principle you don't even know api alocha, you don't have to wear tzitzis at night, nevertheless, api kabbalah, you should, which is why we have the concept of night tzitzis, but this is why, especially a bocher who's not yet making the bracha, at least after tzitzis, a bocher who's going to make the bracha every day on mitzvah tzitzis, should make sure that it's a different tzitzis by day or by day and by night, and that way, when he puts on the one in the morning, he'll be able to make a proper bracha on it. Now, then a person is not allowed to cover themselves with a beged that's obligated in tzitzis, which doesn't have tzitzis. And if he is, then if he does, then he's over on a mitzvah saseh. In fact, there was a Gemara, it was in Dafayomi a couple of days ago, where Malach comes to the Ketina and criticizes him. He says, you're always wearing clothing that's potter from tzitzis, because either your clothing has rounded corners or it's made of material that's potter from tzitzis. When are you going to fulfill the actual mitzvah? And he explains that the Idan Rischa, in a time when, so to speak, there's anger of Hashem at the world, then a person is held to account, and then times like that, for not doing the mitzvah of tzitzis. So now a person, but now we're talking about a person actually wears a four cornered garment and doesn't put tzitzis on it, then he's actually over on a mitzvah, so I say flat out. Now, suppose a person, we talked about a couple of sifrim ago, that a person is wearing his talus and it falls off. So we said he's going to have to make another bracha. What about a person is mil shmina esrei and his talus falls off? Suppose another person puts it back on him. And in fact, by the way, later on in Hilchos Tefillah, the Alter Rebbe explains that if a person's talus partially slips off during Shmoneh Esrei, then he himself can adjust it. But if it completely falls off, then it would be a hefsek to go and pick it up, and therefore that's why the Alter Rebbe talks in terms of somebody else putting it back on. Anyway, so if somebody else puts it on him, now what's he going to do as far as the bracha? You can't say the bracha in middle Shmoneh Esrei. Then when he finishes Shmoneh Esrei, then he should handle the tzitzis, take the tzitzis in his hand, and then make the bracha. Because as usual, handling them is considered to a certain extent like putting it on now. We find that by tefillin, and we find that by tzitzis. Now, the last sif in the siman, the Alter Rebbe says, if a person sleeps during the day, better he shouldn't take off his talus cotton. He can cover himself with it while he sleeps. Later on, that way, when he puts it on again, afterwards he won't need a bracha because he didn't take it completely off.